This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 4, Episode 49, The Mitchell Johnson Problem. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the problems of Mitchell Johnson, both playing him and managing that pace and searing bounce. We also talk to Menno Gazandam about spin bowling, backspin, side spin, and whether you need all those different types of spin. And we look at batting left or right-handed. If you're dominant with one hand, does that mean you should bat the same way? All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time for the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to scaling the mountain of cricket. And of course, if you wanted to scale any kind of a mountain, you'd need the best. So I'm going to pick myself as Edmund Hillary and Mark Garraway, Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. You have the job of being Sherpa Tenzing.
Well, I'm happy with that role. You know, just load me up. Anything you want me to carry, any directions you need, just ask me and I'll point the way.
Yes, but it's often the Sherpa who really knows what's going on. So, you know, I think that's a fine role for you.
You can take the credit, mate. That's not a problem.
I'll take the photos at the top and then say how good everybody is. So we're talking during the Ashes, of course, and Australia are the side who are on top at the moment. And I thought it might be interesting to have a look at one of the big reasons why Australia are the side who are on top at the moment, which is to do with pace bowling. And it's an interesting topic from a lower level because England are experiencing something that very rarely happens and Australia are experiencing something that very rarely happens, which is genuine pace bowling. So from a coaching point of view, when we're talking about from players at lower levels, how much time should you spend on this kind of playing genuine pace bowling when it happens so rarely and really only when you get to the top level?
Well, it's a brilliant question. I mean, in terms of England's preparation for this tour, I think with the number of bowlers that are actually out for Australia, which is probably a little bit scary if you look at it from an English perspective, they've got four or five players out. But what that did was mean that Mitchell Johnson was definitely going to be part of the bowling stocks in the series in the first few games. So we knew that. And I don't think it's just about the pace. I mean, his pace has been amazing. You've got to take your hat off to somebody who can average 93 mile an hour over a bowling spell, because there's been very few in the history of the game that have been able to sustain that over a seven over period, let alone at this present moment in time.
Yeah.
So he's done really well there. And I think a lot of that comes down to do with the gaps that he's had in his training program, you know, and his playing program. So he's not been somebody who's been a workhorse that's bowled, you know, every single test match for the last 25 test matches. He's actually somebody who's come in, made an impact, lost it a bit, gone back again, done some training and then come back again and done really well. And he's had fits and starts of absolute brilliance in amongst some stuff which has led him to be dropped. And, you know, there could be something in terms of rotation around that and how they manage him going forward, seeing that he's now 32. But going back to the question about England, you don't get it very often. But I do know that from the ages of sort of 15, 16 nowadays in England, they're getting exposed to some pretty high-paced practice, both on bowling machines and the mental strategies around it, and also on sidearm and simulating practice. So it's not as if they haven't been exposed to it. But I think the difference with Mitchell Johnson in this series has been obviously the angles that he's bowling it from as well, which have unnerved people. So when you put 94 mile an hour with some angles that generally aren't practiced on a regular basis and certainly are only practiced in a specific time like now, then it can expose people. And so the thing that I learned from it more than anything is if you are going to be working on bowling machines, then shift the angles of them to actually, you know, sort of simulate a Mitchell Johnson-esque type person. I think that's really important. It's something I've certainly taken on board as a result of his series.
So how would that look when you've got somebody who is aspirational towards higher levels and they feel like they want to know how to play pace bowling, but they also have the challenge of learning how to play spin, learning how to be aggressive in 2020 cricket, getting your basic technique down, getting 20 or 30 other things possibly that you want to keep working on and improving. How do you fit that into a program when it is such a rarely seen phenomenon, that really quick bowler?
Well, you drop it in, and I think you just keep it really varied, you practice, and it's an opportunity to bang it in every now and again and then do some support stuff in your sessions that you have afterwards. So, I constantly ramp the bowling machine up, or I bowl with a sidearm, which is horrible. And then we'll have a look at how that went, and then we'll put a little bit of support around it, because ultimately there's very few people that would face that sidearm, because I've got relatively good at bowling with it and find it easy to play. So they go in there with a sort of acceptance it's going to be quite difficult, but it's all about the learning that comes off of the back of it. How you fit it in, to me, it's one of the foundations of batting, is to be able to play fast bowling. And if you're overtraining, and if you're doing overload training, then you'll often find that you'll practice very, very difficult stuff. And then when it comes down to actually playing in a match on a slower wicket, or with a slightly older ball, or somebody who isn't bowling quite so quick, then you find it quite easy. And most players nowadays are beginning to embrace challenge, whereas we weren't introduced to challenge particularly until we got out into the middle when I was being brought up. So it was all about maintaining confidence in our sessions, and then when I'd get on against somebody who was winging it around my ears, it would be like a completely new experience. Well, I think we've changed the methodology around that now, so we're actually training harder than we actually get to play in the games, and that can only be a good thing. So in terms of time, I think it should be part of every player's program, really. What level of speed you go up to is all about what level that they're aspiring to play at. That it's as simple as that, because 80 miles an hour on a bowling machine will be more than anybody will ever face in club cricket in the most part. So that's an overload session. But if I've got somebody whose realistic ambition is to play international cricket, or at least it, then we'll bang it up to a little bit more than that. And often you'll find that you can vary the use of the balls that you have. There's different bowling machine balls that are a bit lighter, that when they do hit you, you might get stung, but you're not going to break anything. You can introduce all of those sort of things into the program, which gives people a little bit more confidence to build up towards a really hard ball. So there's lots of things you can do, but ultimately playing fast bowling, just as you said, playing spin is a fundamental of the game. And if we can teach people in an overload situation, they'll find that they'll be able to cope with most things when they go out to the middle. Then you put on your specifics like 20/20. But the foundations of a game are the foundations of a game, and pace and spin being two of the most the biggest ones that we have to combat, really.
And looking at it from a bowling point of view, I was speaking with friend of the show and friend of the site, Ian Pont, this week, and he was telling me about his new Pace Academy in India, which the philosophy of which is every bowler, no matter what pace they are, every seam bowler, I should say, no matter what pace they are, would love an extra yard of pace. And that's kind of the philosophy behind his coaching, in that he wants to get away from this idea of accuracy or pace, and say accuracy is a given no matter what your speed is. Now let's put on 10 miles per hour. So I guess looking at it from the Australia's point of view, you've got somebody there who is genuinely quick and needs to be managed, and then you've got players coming through who you want to encourage them to bowl as fast as they can, but you don't want to lose out on accuracy as well. From a coaching point of view, if you're a coach at school or whatever, how do you manage that area, the difference between the turning a trundler into a slightly quicker bowler and turning a slightly quicker bowler into a fast bowler, but yet maintaining their accuracy? How do you manage that?
Well, I think, at some stage, and this is where you choose a timing of your intervention, you have to forgo accuracy a little bit if you are looking to increase pace. And that's why it's really important to do your winter work. And that might be the start of your winter work, for example. So maybe the October or November through to January, you might be looking to increase your pace. And then whilst you've done that, and when you've done that, and when you can prove that you've done that, then you can go back to your strengths. If you were a trundler, which was to hit a length, you're not going to lose those kinesthetics overnight just by gaining a bit of pace. But equally, if you're going to have a focus of gaining 10 miles an hour, as Ian's talking about, then I should imagine you've got to focus massively on doing that. And that comes through strength and conditioning. It comes through some technical changes, which will probably be around the length of your delivery stride and how your front foot lands, and all of these different things. that support extra pace. But that might be a 2 or 3 month period where all you're thinking about is upping your pace, where you're not looking to judge your accuracy. And then when you're getting towards the beginning of the season, from maybe, I don't know, if I'm talking for England, you know, a month or two out, so you're looking at February, March, and the beginning of April, then you go back to looking at your accuracy. But you'll be doing that from a foundation of increased pace. So I don't think you can do both at the same time particularly, and I'd break it down into gathering pace at the beginning of a winter and then putting the accuracy back on top. You might be somebody who finds that you can do it all at once, but I wouldn't suggest that everybody was in a position to do that.
Now, that's interesting, because Ian's definitely of this philosophy of, if the pace and accuracy come from the same thing, so if you can do one, then you should be able to, there's no reason why you can't do the other. So that's interesting.
At the same time.
Yeah, I'm speaking for him, which is always a risky thing to say, but one of his sort of core philosophies is pace and accuracy aren't different things. If you've got someone, all the points of technique to bowl quickly are also all the points of technique to bowl accurately. So
I get that. But then the learning of new skills doesn't necessarily lend itself to focusing on two things. In fact, the learning of new skills, it's very difficult to focus on one new thing, let alone trying to maintain everything else alongside. So whilst I totally respect his position of where he comes from, because he's got, you know, a huge amount of experience and a huge amount of success at doing what he does, I'd be interested in the supporting evidence for that, because it's not been anything that I've witnessed or seen at any level that I've worked at.
I guess the difference is that maybe the point is that you can end up at that point once you've got someone with an absolutely dead-on bowling action, but doing the work.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much what I said at the outset.
Exactly. Doing the work is where you're going to have to spend some time where things are not going great before they settle back in. And that's, if you're doing any technical change, that there's going to be a process there. It's going to be different for different people, but it's going to take a while until it cements itself, isn't it?
Yeah, Peter Moores always says that any change generally is uncomfortable to start off with. And the reason why it's uncomfortable is because you're learning a new skill. Mm. And if it just fits into place and just does that, then often you'll find that in 2 or 3 weeks' time, it's broken back down again. So unless you're really pushing the edge of comfortableness, if that is a word, then you're unlikely to make a change that's going to last, and particularly last under pressure.
Yeah, it's the arm folding thing, isn't it? You know, you fold your arms one way, and you've always folded your arms that way, and that's the way it feels comfortable. Try and do it the other way. Shouldn't feel any different. It feels weird.
Does.
It feels weird and stupid. But if you folded your arms the other way for a month, it would probably feel as normal as the way that you fold your arms now. So, that's a very simple example, but, you know, apply that
but
to the bowling action. Yeah.
but it's right, and that comes down to preference. And, you know, we've all got our preferences for doing things. And all of a sudden, if we start to change those around a bit and go with some models, then often the first couple of weeks are a bit uncomfortable until we start to adapt, which is what we do as human beings, and find a way of working within that model. And, so I haven't experienced people that have just gone like that. I think it's patience, particularly with fast bowlers, it's patience because of the immense physical nature of the task that they're being asked to do. You know, add 10 miles an hour. Crikey, if it was as simple as snapping your fingers, then everybody would be doing it. It is a journey for them. And as coaches, we need to make sure that we're patient and encourage them to be patient as well.
Okay, maybe some advice there for England and Australia, but definitely some advice for all the coaches and players out there involved with pace bowling. Let's wrap up this section now with the yes-no round. Three questions. Gareth and I can only answer yes or no, no matter how much more that we want to say. So, Gareth, if you're ready, let's fire away. Question one. Unorthodoxy seldom works.
No.
Yes. Question two. There's always time to work on the basics.
Yes.
Yes. Question three. Concentration is the most important part of wicketkeeping.
Yes.
Yes. Time now for the question section. Each week, a couple of questions are picked out of the mailbag, and we get to answer them. And the best question of the week wins a prize, which is, of course, an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can send your questions in to us, actually, at coach@pitchvision.com. That's the email, and we'll give you the numbers and all the other ways of contacting us towards the end of the show, so keep listening out for that. We've got a bit of a special this week, in that the first question is about spin bowling. So I thought, who better to ask for an answer to that than spin bowling coach from South Africa, Menno Gazendam. So earlier in the week, I pre-recorded an answer with Menno, and we're going to play that question and the answer right away as the first question. So settle back, Garrus, and you can have a listen to this one. Hi, Menno. Welcome to the show.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me.
Now, Menno, you are our spin bowling man because, of course, you've got the spin bowling tips ebook on the Pitch Vision Academy website. So when we got this question coming in, I thought, who better to ask than you? So Alec has written in with a question as a slow left arm bowler. And he says, I currently have an issue that when I bowl the ball, the delivery has an element of underspin or backspin. What's frustrating is that I'm trying to release the ball with an element of topspin, but do very well to get pure side spin accompanied by a tiny amount of overspin. At times, I'm sure the ball is being released with topspin on it, but looking at the way the ball is spinning in the air, it has backspin. Have you seen this type of issue before? A cricket coach suggested to me that I suffered from a common spinner's undercutter issue, but to me, this means the ball would be spinning tilted back like a UFO, when this is clearly not happening. My goal is to bowl the ball at a 45 degree angle with a combination of side and top spin. So there's lots of different types of spin there. You know, I it wasn't that long ago that I was under the impression that there's only two types of spin. You've got your leg spin and your and your finger spin, and that's it. But he's talking about off spin, under spins, back spins. Where do we start with this?
There's a lot of spin mentioned there. But what I basically understand is he's bowling, the ball's coming out as a backspin, and he's trying to get a more orthodox type spin. That's the crux of the question, as I understand it. I think the problem is a low bowling arm, because with a low bowling arm, you'd get your wrist in a position where you could possibly bowl backspin, where you undercut it all the time. So it's a simple solution. If you want to stop doing that, you've got to get a higher release point, which means having the bowling arm come closer to the ear and releasing it as high as possible, because that is a more orthodox wrist position. It's a more orthodox action as well. It's something out of an MCC coaching manual. Get the arm as close as possible to the ear, as well as getting sidearm. All those things is a very orthodox way of bowling spin. And if you do that, it's almost impossible to rotate the wrist. I wouldn't say impossible. It's very difficult to rotate the wrist where the ball will come out in a backspin fashion. If you have it high on top, you will get the classical orthodox 45 degree, as we call it, spinning action. So if you want this result, simple fact, just get the arm up straighter, get a more side-on action, and release it as high as possible. You made an interesting comment that he said his coach or a coach has told him he suffers from a common spinner's dilemma of undercut. Now, I think the word suffer is wrong. It's got a negative connotation there. I don't think you suffer from anything if you bowl undercut. I think you suffer if you're not taking wickets. If you're bowling classic off-spin, you're not getting wickets, then you're also suffering. So what he's not mentioning here is he taking wickets? Is he successful? If you look at the history of spinners, there's a whole range of subtle variations of people bowling differently. Kumbhle bowled topspin all the time. That worked for him. He did not go for big spin, but that's what worked for him. So if he is bowling backspin, as they say, and he's taking wickets, then I wouldn't call that a suffering dilemma. I'll call it a great problem to have, and I wouldn't even try and change the action.
So theoretically speaking, what would be the advantage of making that change, of going from someone who undercuts the ball, uses backspin to create spin, compared to someone who uses side and top spin and has that seam at that beautiful position that you see Graham Swan bowling.
The advantage then is you get the classical spinning trio of flight and dip and drift, which the ball has to be in that position to do it. But if you can maintain a constant seam position, in batsman, you will also create different problems. There's also dynamics going on there. I'd like to see people drift and dip the ball, but it's not the only way you'll get wickets as a spinner. So that's why I'm very hesitant almost to sell someone where you have to bowl that way.
Yeah, I mean, you've got so many different things that you can do, even within the limitations of only being able to bowl backspin. And this question mentions that he also can bowl a ball that gives him side spin as well. So there's two different types of ball straight away. And then you've got position on the crease. You've got how quickly you bowl the ball, you know, your variations of pace. So you can mess around with angles and you can mess around with speed. And suddenly, you know, if you're putting the ball on the spot four, five, six times and over, and each one is doing something slightly different, then, you know, that is an extremely good bowler and someone who's going to be extremely successful.
Oh, that's great. And drift and dip is great. But are you taking wickets? That is by far the more important question. And if you are taking wickets, I actually could not be bothered about how you go about it. Because who am I to tell you it's not working if you bring home a bag of wickets every weekend? So in this whole question, I don't see anything to be worried about. Of course, if the follow-up comment is, well, I'm not taking any wickets, then okay, then we've got to look at it. But based on the information we have, this is not an issue. This is quite an advantage.
Well, thank you, Mena. Hopefully that has helped Alec to get to the root of his problem. And if there's any other spinners listening and they've got similar problems, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the spin bowling section, and you'll find tons of articles from Menno there, and you also find a link to his free 8-week spin bowling course, which is delivered to you by email. So Menno is a man when it comes to spin bowling advice. Thanks for coming on the show to help us out with that, Menno.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it, and it was a nice question, an interesting question to answer.
Thank you very much, Menno, and hopefully that's helped you out a little bit, Alec. Now on to the next question. And Gareth, stand by your bed, because you're back in on this one. And it's from our good old friend, Minga. He's back again. I think he sent about 5 questions a week in, Minga, so I feel like we should almost have a Minga section.
Well, no, I'm all over that.
And it's a good question, as we often get from our friend Minga. He says, hi, I'm interested in your thoughts on players like Michael Hussey and Matthew Hayden having their top hand as their more dominant hand. They're right-handed at everything else, but they bat left-handed. It seems that a lot of players like this are very successful.
Yeah, I mean, I played with one, a bloke called David Gower. He was fairly useful, and he used to throw right-handed and bat left-handed. So, yeah. In terms of success, there's also been some pretty good ones down the years that have thrown right-handed and batted right-handed and thrown left-handed and batted left-handed. So somebody like Gary Sobers, he was all right and he did everything left-handed. So I think whilst it's a brilliant observation, certainly from a coaching perspective, it's not essential that anybody does it in any which way. And as I'm learning more, and I'm out in Switzerland at the moment working with some guys that put a foundation and framework on why this happens, and generally it happens because the preference of the individual and the way that their body's knitted together and the way that their minds work mean that some players like a Matthew Hayden and a Michael Hussey come out throwing right-handed and batting left-handed, and then likes a Gower and others don't. And I think the crucial thing as coaches is that we don't get in the way of that process. One of the interesting bits on this was my dad, for example. My dad was somebody who copied his dad, who was a left-hander, in his batting, and actually he did get changed because his school teacher, who was a good cricket coach, was struggling one day when he was around the age of 9, and just felt that my dad wasn't in a comfortable position. And what he said to my dad back in those days is was I'm not going to throw at you until you look more comfortable at the crease. And when and that was a, you know, obviously a huge number of years ago. We're talking nearly 60, so well, probably 60 years ago now. Mm-hmm. But when he talked to the likes of Graham Gooch about batting, he says that, you know, it's essential that, that people are comfortable when they bat, that their body is in a position that they can repeat that stance, because the stance is really important. And the aim, really, for batters is at the top game is to bat for 6 hours. Now, if you're not in a comfortable position, then you're not going to be able to do that. So whilst nature is really important, when we make sure that the batter does what they want to do, and all the research suggests that that is massively important, so that David Gowers would throw right-handed and bat left-handed, leave them to get on with it. Then the only time that I would ever intervene now would be if somebody didn't look natural.
It's one of those areas where I think you could overthink it, can't you? You can start to think about, well, hang on a minute, I need my top hand to be dominant, so therefore I need to be my strongest hand, so therefore I need to be, if I'm right-handed, I need to be my right hand, and therefore, you know, I should bat left-handed. And you've gone through that sort of mental gymnastics, but then you've forgotten that it doesn't feel very comfortable when you actually do it. But but then on the other hand, we were talking about the arm folding thing. If you try something new and it doesn't feel comfortable, does that mean you should stop doing it and go back to the old way of doing it that does feel comfortable? That's an interesting question around that area as well, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I'm going to go back a little bit here, because I know we've always talked about the top hand being dominant, but I think that's a bit of conventional coaching, because you only have to watch certain games and certain players play in those games, and their top hand is the less or the least dominant of the two hands that they have on the bat. And friend of the show, Desmond Haynes, who's got a course on the mm-hmm. on the course resources, he was somebody whose top hand played a very limited part in the way that he batted. His bottom hand, and I don't mean that he whipped everything, I mean that his bottom hand was the one that was closest to the body a lot, and it would be the thing that would realign the bat to the ball. He could still play straight, but his top hand and his top shoulder in particular would often be pointing towards the onside when he was defending the ball back down the wicket. And there's lots of players that do that. So whilst we've always gone with the notion that the top hand is the one that would is the most dominant, you know, there are some fantastic examples in all forms of cricket of people that don't operate in that fashion. And this is where preference comes back into play. And, you know, so I'm really intrigued of top hand dominance being really important, because, you know, you watch Test series or you watch the Indians playing against the West Indies at the moment, and there's lots of examples there where the bottom hand, not necessarily, you know, gripping the bat too hard and whacking it through mid wicket, but actually the bottom hand is the one that is dominating and actually aligning the bat back down the ball path. So you know, I think that's a bit of conventional coaching that we can now start to pick holes in a bit, because there's so many examples of people that are doing it differently.
Okay, that is about all we've got time for the questions. So let's head over to the newsroom where Daisy Cutter is waiting with this week's Pitch Vision headlines.
Hey guys, hi, I'm Daisy Cutter and this is the Pitch Vision News. Cricket South Africa integrates Pitch Vision's pressure sensor technology that provides bowlers with impact pressure on the front foot landing. This is important for young players to help prevent injury. Pitch Vision sensors will provide the landing position on the crease so bowlers can be monitored. Englishmen are the biggest hitters on Pitch Vision. Stats from this year for six hitting have shown that 8 of the top 10 are Englishmen, with Beppe X topping the charts, hitting 96 maximums. However, Kumar A78 represents India at number 2 with 48 sixes. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision news for this week. I've been Daisy Cutter, and now it's back to the panel.
Now it's time for one of my favourite parts of the show, because I get to sit back for a minute and just listen. It's the Soapbox, 60 seconds of uninterrupted rant, and this week it's Gareth on the Soapbox. 60 seconds on the clock, over to you, Gareth.
It's not a rant, it's a story this week, and I was in Denmark at the weekend doing a coaching conference, and I put a slide up on the screen and gave them one of my non-negotiables as a coach, which is that you always to run the first ball hard, and whenever we hit the ball to mid-on, the first thing we think about is a single. The first instinct is to start running. And that was all very well and good until about five hands went up in the room and they said, well, that's brilliant, but that's applied to your environments. And in our environments, we play on municipal grounds where the council cut it, and they're all football grounds as well as cricket ones. So the grass length is always long. Therefore, the fielders are all on top of us. And as a result of that, we can't take those quick singles to mid-off and mid-on. And that made me think, actually, you know, why should I have my template and smack that up on everybody that I come into contact with? So, bobbly outfields, yes, take them on. Quick outfields where they're deep, take them on. Grass a bit longer, don't take them on. Pop one over the top, force them back, and then take the single and use the grass to your advantage. So a really good lesson for me from Denmark this week.
And that is the end of the show for this week. We've had some answers from all around the world this week, and hopefully we've been able to help people as we normally have been able to do. But before we go, Gareth, we've got to decide on the best question this week. Now, I know you weren't involved in one of the answers, but we're basing it on the question rather than the answer this week. So we had Alex's question about underspin, backspin and topspin. And we had Mingus' question about batting left or right-handed. So which one did you prefer this week?
Well, I'm going to go with Alex's question this week on spin. I've heard the same question asked twice in the last week and answered by two experts who have given some real core fundamentals, which have been very similar, with a couple of different slants. So that's certainly broadened my awareness of how to cope with that particular challenge. So I'm going to go with Alec.
Congratulations, Alec. You win the prize, which is the online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Now, Gareth, if someone was thinking, I want to get in touch with the show and win that prize or just have my question answered, how would they get in touch with us via the telephonic device?
Well, they could give us a ring, David, and the number to give us a call on is 0203 239 7543, or they can drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
Yep, just attach your phone to the modem like Matthew Broderick did in War Games and wait for it to connect, and you can send us an email in that way. You can also use Twitter, Pitch Vision Acad, and you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you want to listen to the show every week, then you can subscribe. Like all good podcasts, you can subscribe to the show. iTunes is the one that most people use, and you can find us in there just by searching for Pitch Vision Academy. Or if you want to use any other podcatcher, just head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link at the top, and you get the instructions for how to subscribe in there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.